We had said last time that Karma Yoga has three aspects: the object, and the instrument, and the method. The object is to be able to do action without bondage, without incurring bondage. To do action and yet to be free from action, that is the object. The instrument is will. And third is the method. The method consists of three steps. The will is normally weakened in us because of desire. Wherever there is desire, there is a fluctuation in our consciousness. We are not able to fix ourselves on one specific point. So a will which is afflicted by desire is to be so clean, so purified, that it becomes fixed, sthita. The question is, what is the method by which this process can be done? If will can become concentrated, then the object that you have put forward can be realized. To do an action without incurring bondage. Since desire is the affliction, Sri Krishna first of all points out that point where desire is strongest has to be tackled first. The desire is strongest at the point of the seeking of fruits of action, the enjoyment of the fruits of action. Therefore, the first step is to do action, but without the desire for the fruits of actions. The second is to understand the process of action in reality. In reality, we find all action is a part of a cosmic movement, vast movement. This vast movement is a result of yajna, of a sacrifice. This yajna proceeds from the Supreme. Although in our experience we find action to be proceeding from our small little ego. As a result we say, I am doing or I am not doing. But later on we find that this ego itself is a cog in the machine of a cosmic nature. Therefore we say that the action proceeds from Prakriti. Because this whole machine is called Prakriti. And then we discover that this Prakriti itself is moved by a greater will. And that greater will is the Supreme Lord Himself. It is the will thrown by the Supreme Lord which is returned in a reverse movement, and this movement continues on and on and on, and that is what we call the process of exchange. This process of exchange is what is called yajna. There is an offering on the part of the Supreme. There is, on the other hand, a return of offering from the Supreme Shakti. And between the two, there is a constant exchange. In that process, we as individuals are a center without circumference. That center, in that center, this process is repeated. If we allow that process to continue on and on and on, then we see that action proceeds, but we are free from egoistic attribution to the action to ourselves. We see the vastness in which the action goes on, proceeding by itself. We do not interfere with it by our desire. If you can do this, then action will proceed and yet we shall not be affected by it. But normally, since we are egoistic, we have the tendency to interfere. We constantly interfere in this vast movement. Therefore, the procedure to be followed is that instead of clutching at the action's movements, we ourselves repeat the process of offering. So action is offered from our side. The action that seems to be proceeding from ourselves, that action we simply offer. This process of offering is yajna. Therefore, the second step consists in offering our actions. Now, in the process of offering, we get a great advantage, namely of doing action without the desire for the fruits of action. Psychologically, it is very difficult to do an action without the desire for fruits of action. Therefore, if you do an action with a sense of offering, and then we feel comforted psychologically that we are doing an action for something. That something is not to grasp at anything, but to offer to Pushpam, Pushpam, Patram, Posh, Toyam, the water or the flower or the leaf. Our action may be regarded in the form of these three things, and we offer it to the Lord. If you continue to do this, a stage can come when it becomes automatic and we become free from clutching at any action and grasping at it, and therefore we are liberators. Now, in the process of sacrifice, we had said that this is the second step and we shall go to the third. But between the second and the third, there is a long procedure. This second step is a very, very long procedure. Because normally we offer our actions to ordinary objects, ordinary instruments. To offer our action to the Lord is a long procedure, because first of all, we do not see the Lord. We only see ordinarily instruments around us. Therefore, in the first place, we seem to be offering ourselves. Even when we say, I am offering to the Lord, usually the objects to whom we offer are ordinary. At a higher stage, greater forces are visible, which in the language of the Veda are called gods, cosmic powers. So we begin to offer them to the gods. And then After that, we begin to offer it to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, sacrifice is supposed to be a process of ascent. In Sanskrit, there is a word Adhvara. Adhvara is a path of ascent. And sacrifice is also called Adhvara. That is why one who does the sacrifice is called Adhvaryu. The priest is called Adhvaryu. That is because sacrifice is a path which moves upwards. It takes us from lower level to the higher levels. But ultimately, when we reach that point, the third movement of Karma Yoga starts. What is the third movement? In the third movement, we find that action no more proceeds from us. Till that time we are feeling, although it is not a correct feeling, but it is a feeling that the action proceeds from us and you are offering the action to the Lord. But when you reach a stage where you have been offering to the Lord, you begin to perceive that action proceeds from the Lord Himself. This is the distinction between the second step and the third step. In the second step, when you are offering, you have the perception that the action proceeds from yourself and you are offering it to the Lord. But in the third step, you find that the Lord Himself is acting. This is the culmination of Karma Yoga. When the Lord Himself is acting and the action proceeds from Him and you find that it proceeds through you, then you realize you are simply the instrument of the action. You are no more offering even. It is simply a movement from above and you are the instrument and you do not deflect it at all, because by now the process of offering has become so great that clutching, that consciousness of clutching at things disappears. Therefore, without any obstruction from your part, the action flows. As a flute, for example, when the flute player plays on the flute, if the flute is absolutely smooth and pure, then the wind which is blown into the flute receives no obstruction. And therefore the flute plays the tunes exactly as the flute player wants to play. The flute gives no resistance at all. So when our instrumentality becomes so pure by the action of offering all the time, that there is no movement of clutching at anything, then the Lord's will proceeds from us, proceeds from Him, but proceeds through us. There was a time when one disciple told the mother, "Mother, I am doing mother's work." So mother said, "It will take a long time before you can do mother's work. First you do work for the mother, and then at a certain stage it will be mother's work later on." Now this is one of the important things that has to be distinguished. To do the work for the Lord, and then to do the Lord's work. The second stage is the stage where you are doing work for the Lord. Then a third stage comes when you really do the Lord's work. Now these are the three steps of Karma Yoga. To do action without the desire for the fruits of action is the first step. To do the work as a sacrifice, as an offering to the Lord, is the second step. Third, to reach a stage where the work proceeds from the Lord and is passed through you as an instrument, then the third step. The third step is also called Divyam Karma, a stage of Divyam Karma. When you do the divine work, not work for the divine, but it is a divine Divyam Karma. In your whole being, since there is no egoistic vibration, since there is no desire, the entire will of the divine, when it proceeds through you, there is no veil. And therefore there is no scattering away of the will, no distortion of the will. It proceeds straight and with all its force, irresistibly, omnipotently. Now this in brief is the entire teaching of Sri Krishna in the first four chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, where what exactly is the action is described. And you will see that in this procedure, as we proceed further on and on in our path, we become aware of what we are, what the world is, what the Supreme is. And therefore, it is a process in which Karma Yoga becomes Karma Yoga by virtue of the knowledge. Without the knowledge, there will be only a mechanical movement, but there is no conscious participation and no conscious understanding. Therefore, the real Karma Yoga won't be possible. That is why this Karma Yoga is supposed to be a union of karma and jnana. It's a synthesis of karma and jnana. There is also at the same time increasing process of devotion. Because when you begin to offer yourself to the Lord, then as you come nearer and nearer to the Lord, the devotion for the Lord also increases. And therefore, in your offering to the Lord, experience of devotion also gets mingled with it. Now, this last portion is not fully expounded in the first four chapters. That aspect will come much later when we come to the 11th chapter and the 10th chapter, 11th chapter and 12th chapter. And a further exposition will come even much later, because this is a very important element of bhakti and the culmination of bhakti. So that at the end, in the 18th chapter, when the purity of our instrumentality becomes so great, that sarva dharman parityajya, all dharma, each dharma is also an obstacle. Each standard of action is also an obstacle. When our entire being becomes so pure that there is no thought even of dharma, then the Supreme's will can pass through us, but that will require a complete offering. Mam ekam sharanam raja, a complete offering. So, what is described in the second, third and fourth chapters is ultimately continued to be developed in the 7th chapter, 8th chapter and 9th chapter particularly, how the knowledge element becomes more and more powerful. And then 10th, 11th and 12th chapter, we are told how bhakti becomes very powerful. And then from 13th to 18th chapters, we are told as to how absolutely our entire being becomes free from all kinds of sattva, rajas, tamas, all gunas, and we completely transcend them, then we shall have completed our whole process of yoga. But in the first four chapters, you might say the basic foundation of Karma Yoga is laid down. Now there is in the process, as we had seen last time, a combination of two elements. The element of the development of sense of equality and perception of oneness. This knowledge that whole world is nothing but one reality, that the source of the whole world is one reality, one without the second. This perception, growth of this perception, is an accompaniment of your development of Karma Yoga. As a result, whatever happens to us, we are able to offer it with equality, samatvam. We have seen last time that of samatvam, there is first a very important statement of the Gita, samatvam yoga uchyate. It is equality that is called the yoga. Second statement we had seen was, yoga karmasu kaushalam. Usually when there is equality, there is neutrality. And neutrality at a lower stage becomes indifference. In order that we do not become indifferent, Sri Krishna says that the mark that your samatvam is of a correct type, you must measure your action. If in your action there is any kind of inefficiency, any kind of negligence, then that samatvam is not a correct samatvam. It has become deteriorated into indifference. There has to be perfect application in your action. Simply because you are equal to results in one way or the other, your application, your proficiency should not diminish. Therefore, these two sentences are of extreme importance because they give the measurement. If you want to watch out and make a measurement whether your karma yoga is on the right lines with the right kind of pressure, then you must see how much is your equality and how much is your efficiency. Now, there is a very important question which can be raised at this stage. There is a view that karma yoga consists of doing only specific kinds of action. This is different from Sri Krishna's view that karma yoga consists of doing sarva karmani, all kinds of action. So we have to take into account this conflict which has been in the Indian tradition. According to this tradition, according to one of these traditions, karma yoga consists of doing actions of specific kinds, not all actions. It is on the basis of this idea that the word yajna is often understood. According to that theory, only yajna should be done and no other work. And by yajna was meant the ritualistic sacrifice. So the idea was that from among so many kinds of actions, you are only to pick up only those actions which are related to the ritualistic sacrifice, the arrangement for the sacrifice, collecting of the materials for the sacrifice, inviting people for the sacrifice, to do all the activities of yajamana, one who invites, and all the activities in regard to the lighting of the fire of the sacrifice, the offering of all your materials into the fire, the recitation of mantra, which is also connected with the offering of your sacrifice. The distribution of all the materials which are used and which are to be gifted away to the people, that is also, according to this theory, the right kind of action. And then for you to eat what is remaining at the end, the remainder, and if you do not do this sort of thing, and if you eat away everything, then as Sri Krishna says, it is called stena. You are called a thief. Because you have taken away the things of the others. They should have been gifted to the others and you are taking it away. You are entitled only to the remainder. Now this is the theory of Karmakanda, of the Vedic ritualism. Not a Veda, but Vedic ritualism. Now Sri Krishna, as I said last time, describes this process also in the Bhagavad Gita while speaking of Yajna. And therefore it might give an impression that Sri Krishna also advocates this theory of Karmakanda. Although in the second chapter he has already spoken of Vedavada Rataha in a condemnatory manner. He has condemned the Vedic ritualistic method. Yet in the third chapter he repeats the Karmakanda and gives an impression as if he prescribes only those actions which are to be done for Yajna. But later on, he explains that real Agni is Brahma Agni. Brahma itself is the Agni. That there are many kinds of Yajnas. When you control all the senses, that also is a yajna. When you control your breath, that is also yajna. When you do any action and offer it, that is yajna. When you do tapasya and offer it, that is also yajna. And the highest is jnana yajna. When you offer your knowledge, first of all, attain to the knowledge and offer that knowledge, that is the highest yajna according to Sri Krishna. And then he uses the word explicitly, sarva karmani. All actions, it is not something specific which is ritualistic sacrifice. This is the one theory about karma yoga, and we have to be clear that in Bhagavad Gita, there is no selection of a specific kinds of works. All works are to be offered. All works are to be sacrificed. Now there is another theory which points out that while ritualistic sacrifice is of course to be eschewed, we have to do only those actions which are prescribed by dharma. This is another theory. Not ritualistic sacrifice, but only dharmic kriyas. This is another theory. When you want to do an action, you do only those actions which are dharmic kriyas, which are prescribed in dharma. Not all actions, but only those actions which are prescribed as dharmic kriyas. This is also called another theory of karma yoga. Now this is more subtle than the first one. The first one is easier to find out because rituals are all prescribed and given. But when you are told you have to do only dharmic kriyas, then in regard to dharmic kriyas, there are many controversies which is dharmic kriyas and which are not. Now in the Bhagavad Gita, we get several words which seem to be favoring this view. So that also we must take into account and distinguish in our mind very clearly. There is first a word which is used, niyatam karma. Now, niyatam karma is a word which means that which is prescribed. Action which is prescribed is called niyatam karma. And very often, niyatam karma is associated with nityam karma. That which is a daily work to be done. Nityam karma and niyatam karma both are associated with each other. So it is argued that the kind of action that you have to do is prescribed daily work. At a later stage, you get another word in the Bhagavad Gita. And he says, dharmajam karma. You do the karma which is arising out of dharma. Dharmajam karma kuru. Then there is another word which says, sahajam karma kuru. A further complication. Dharmajam karma kuru and then sahajam karma. Sahajam means that it is spontaneous. That which arises from your very nature. So there is a further word, svabhava sahajam karma. You do the work which is arising out of your own svabhava. Svabhava jam, swadharma jam, sahajam karma. That also is given in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita also says that there is a distinction between swadharma and paradharma. And even says that even if you do an action, but not so well, but if it is your swadharma, then that is to be preferred to an action which you can do very well, but which is not according to your dharma. This is very clearly stated. The work which you can do very well, but if it is not according to your swadharma, then that is not to be accepted. We should not do that action. We should on the contrary do that action which is according to your swadharma, even though that action you may not be able to do so well. It may be my dharma, swadharma, to teach. I may be very good at cooking. Between the two, even if I cannot teach well, I must still teach. And I must avoid cooking because cooking is not my swadharma. This is the kind of meaning that we can apply to these words. Now, there are many other questions also arise with regard to this. Remember, I am now going into the depths of the problems regarding Karma Yoga. The three steps are very clearly stated. Now it is in the stage of what kind of karma, when you are offering, what kind of offering you have to do, we are trying to analyze this. And there are many subtleties in this. That is why we need to be much more clear about it. There are further complications. Atmana atmanam uddharet. This is another great sentence of the Bhagavad Gita. You should raise yourself by yourselves. Atmana atmanam uddharet. Now, in raising yourself by yourselves, by what will you raise yourself? Now, normally we are in many activities at the level of tamas. Therefore, it may be prescribed that when you are in the tamasic condition and you want to raise yourself, then apply rajas so that you are raised up. When you are rajasic, then apply sattva so that you are raised up further. So how do you decide at what stage, what kind of action you have to do? Will you do tamasic action or rajasic action or sattvic action? This is also a further complication. This raises the question, what is the right action, what is the good action? Now the answer to this whole complexity is that fundamentally, whatever action you happen to be doing, you offer it to the Supreme Lord. Basically, this is the basic answer to the Bhagavad Gita. All other propositions which have been made are important and they need to be taken into account. But if there is any problem in the mind, one thing is that the moment you do an action as an offering to the Lord, and when you have given up the desire for the fruits of action, then even if it is a duskrita or it is sukrita, whatever it may be, the moment you do this, you'll be free from action. This is one general simple proposition. Now we go further and discuss all the other details. Take for example, we always tell the children read because we think that reading is a good thing. We do not ask the question whether really reading is a good thing and whether reading all the time is a good thing and reading anything and everything is a good thing. These are the detailed questions which you do not raise at all. We simply want to see the child keeping himself busy with the book and we find that the child is doing well. It's a very superficial kind of perception in which we are involved. If the child is talking to a friend, we don't like it. It's a waste of time. If the child is playing games, it is not a good thing because wasting time. It will not give good marks to the child ultimately. This is how we consider. What then is the measure by which we shall decide what is to be done by the child? In the theory of dharmajam karma, it is much easier. What is given, written down, what is niyatam karma, what is prescribed, it is easier to find out. But Sri Krishna's meaning of niyatam karma is much more subtle. You are offering at that stage, whatever there is an essence. Gradually you go on expanding yourself and your sacrifice has become greater and greater, much more intelligence, much more understanding, much more luminous. The word niyatam karma, if you examine the context in which the word is used in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find that niyatam means that which is controlled, not prescribed, but that which is controlled. Yat comes from the word making an effort. Yatna, the word yatna comes from the word yat. An effort always means regulated effort. The real effort is that effort which is the real effort, that is a regulated effort. I may go on tilling the soil, but in a haphazard manner. That is not called effort. The effort is when I really put the plow, yoke it with the bull, and see that the plowshare actually is entered into the soil, and then when it moves, it really cuts the soil and moves forward. Therefore, it is a niyatam. It is that which is regulated. All regulation is a method. All methodized effort is yoga. The very definition of yoga is nothing but methodized effort. Therefore, niyatam karma is a karma which is determined by yoga. So, it is now no more something to be found in the books, which is a book of prescriptions. Niyatam karma is a work which is determined by the yogic effort. And Nityam Karma is not only the daily activities which you are obliged to do every time, but it is Niyatam Karma which has to be done Nityam. You have to do all the time the Niyatam Karma. All activities which you have to do all the time, all your activities, daily activities have to be Niyatam, have to be determined by yoga. Therefore, the solution is that all works, not something this or that, all works are to be offered, are to be performed. But still, there is a real meaning of svabhava, swadharma, sahaja. These also have to be taken into account. In the process of rising from lower level to the higher level, this idea of svabhavam or swadharma and sahaja, all the three concepts are to be taken into account. Although in the beginning all actions can be offered, at the end all the actions are to be offered, but in the process of ascent, there is a real point in making a distinction. And that is why Sri Krishna says that an action done according to Swadharma is to be preferred. Swadharme nidhanam shreyaha, varadharmo bhayavaha. This is another sentence in the Bhagavad Gita. Swadharme nidhanam shreyaha. While doing your action according to Swadharma, even if death occurs, it is better than doing something that is appertaining to the dharma of another. Varadharmo bhayavaha is perilous, dangerous. It is perilous to follow somebody else's dharma. Now, what is the meaning of this?
Is this Swadharma just decided by birth in this context?
Sri Krishna himself says, guna karma vibhagashaha, or swadharma arises from swabhava. Swabhava is according to the varna. Varna is not decided by janma, by birth. It is decided by guna karma vibhagashaha. According to your natural qualities and your natural inclination of action, it is that which decides it. In our tradition, however, gradually, swabhava and swadharma came to be determined by birth. This was the beginning of the deterioration of Indian tradition. If India had to keep itself alive to the truth that without, irrespective of birth considerations, we have to decide whether you are this or that or that or that, Brahmin or Vaishya or Kshatriya or Shudra, then our culture would have remained very strong. But human nature is mechanical. It wants to decide things mechanically, much more easily. Just as in the examination system, you should be able to judge each one individually. Each one should be compared with his highest. But that is very difficult. So we give a general examination to everybody and then judge by comparison. Because much easier, so mechanical. Even in marking, we follow a very routinized mechanical method. 5 answers are given, more or less correctly, so equal marks should be given. Without realizing that to give a very intelligent answer to one question may be more difficult than answering 5 questions. As Pranav rightly said the other day, that the answer that they give, the teacher does not appreciate. And it is quite true. An intelligent answer to one question is to be much more appreciated than mechanical answers to five questions. But mechanically it's difficult. If you are going to give attention to each one of these intelligent answers, then teacher has to work very hard, and that human beings don't normally accept. So they make out a mechanical chart. If this question is answered in this way, correct. If it is slightly different, it is not correct. This is the difficulty of human nature. If you have to decide what is your swabhava and swadharma according to your perception of the guna and karma, it is a very difficult task. You have to examine each one very, very thoroughly, very minutely, with a great subtlety, with a great complexity. But if there is a benchmark, oh, he is a son of a Brahmin, therefore he is Brahmin, it's very easy. Therefore, consistent with the mechanical nature of human nature, the profound idea of swabhava and swadharma got deteriorated. We forgot, for example, the great statement, Janmana Jayate Shudraha. Everybody is born a Shudra at birth. Everybody. It is by guna and karma that a distinction arises whether is Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Now these profound statements have been relegated into the background. That is why Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita does not allow you to take recourse to mechanical answers. And he has...
Papa, I said that when, like say, there are two children you have or three children you have, how is it that everybody's nature from birth is different? Sabke swabhav alag tarah ke rehte hain, and we always say a basic nature cannot be changed. That means it must be their karmas that they must be born with such a nature. Is it true?
The point is that each individual is a special manifestation from the divine, having a very specific action to be done by him or by her. This is what is really called swabhava. The original bhava of his own self. Swabhava means bhava of the swa. Swa means oneself. The swa actually is nothing but the portion of the divine himself. The divine himself is Satchidananda. Therefore, basic swabhava of everybody is Satchidananda. Of everyone, no distinctions. Because that is the common nature of everyone. And yet, in the play of the world, each one is given a specific task. Therefore, there is a preponderance of the movement towards that task which is supposed to perform. So, those energies which are appropriate to that action, they become prominent in a given individual. Others do not become so predominant, they become predominant in another person. So swabhava has two meanings. Swabhava is that which is born out of the divine and which in any case will manifest irresistibly. And secondly, swabhava is that which is appertaining to your specific work in the world. Now both the things are important while giving an account of an individual. There are certain things which are common to everybody, but there are also certain things which are specific to a given individual. Now this is, I am answering a question at the origin. But the question that you have put forward is a question regarding what is happening now, not at the origin. The answer to that question is that each one of us even though he has a swabhava of these two kinds, he has been cast into the veil of ignorance. Therefore, his original swabhava gets distorted in this veil of ignorance. So there is a conflict between the movement of nature in which we are cast and our original nature and our original action, which has been prescribed for us by our very being. Now, in the movement of nature into which we are cast, there are three movements: sattva, rajas and tamas. Our original nature is Satchidananda, whereas here you find the three movements of sattva, rajas and tamas. So there is a conflict between Satchidananda nature and the nature which is specific for yourself in this world drama. These two get into conflict with rajas, tamas and sattva. For the moment, since we are caught in the net of ignorance, we forget our real swabhava. Identifying ourselves with tamas, rajas and sattva, we think I am tamasic, we think I am rajasic, we think I am sattvic, which is not your real nature. None of these elements is your real nature. But we get entangled into this. All of us, therefore, as long as we are in ignorance, are in basic conflict. We are identifying ourselves with whatever is predominant in sattva, rajas and tamas, in the prakriti. Although behind this, there is always an inner feeling which proceeds from our real nature. Discovery of our real nature, even though entangled into sattva, rajas and tamas, is a basic work of man. Not to regard ourselves to be sattvic, rajasic and tamasic, but to discover our real self, our true nature, Satchidananda nature, and the nature which proceeds from our real work, this is our task. And Karma Yoga is fundamentally a process of this discovery.
But there's nothing more than destiny.
Destiny is the work that you are supposed to do in the world. Right from the beginning, you are given a task to be done in the world, which nobody else will do. It is your specific work. It is, imagine that you are like a god. When you are directing a drama, you are like God. You tell so many actors and assign to each one the acting that he has to do according to a character. You have assigned to each one whatever he is supposed to do. Now imagine these actors are very unintelligent. And the work that you are assigning to them, they don't understand very well. They crudely do their acting. Then as a director, what do you do? You constantly train them and say, look, this is not your role, this is your role. Now, this is what we are supposed to do in this world. We are all crude actors in this world. God has given a work to us and we are acting in a haphazard manner, and therefore we don't succeed very often because we are doing all haphazard. We have a destiny. To the extent to which we are able to bring out our swabhava and put it rightly into our outer nature and surmount sattva, rajas and tamas, or even to make sattva, rajas and tamas act according to our swabhava, even more sattva, rajas and tamas, even though we are overpowered by it, even to make that act according to our real sabhava, this is one of the most important tasks of karma yoga. Therefore, this karma yoga cannot be done mechanically. This karma yoga requires subtlety. You have got to be awakened. You have got to do very intelligently. That is why it's called yoga of intelligent will. It is yoga of buddhi. If you don't apply buddhi, if you do not apply your consciousness, then this yoga cannot be performed. What is the difference between a good teacher and a bad teacher? Bad teacher teaches mechanically. A good teacher is one who takes into account every child and sees what is his swadharma, what is his swabhava, and how the child has got entangled into some other qualities which are not according to swabhava, and therefore is not able to do rightly what he is supposed to do. To put every child on the level in which his swabhava really manifests, that is the real task of the mother, of the father, of the friends, of the teachers. Every individual is to be helped in that line. So, this swabhava concept is very important in karma yoga. When we say all actions are to be offered to the divine, we have to make a statement saying all actions have first to be analyzed. You have to see levels of actions. We have to see what is really actions proceeding from true swabhava and what is proceeding on account of our entanglement with sattva, rajas and tamas. How to match these two and how gradually to allow the swabhava to come out. Swabhava is something which is irresistible. Even though for the time being, it may become resisted, it may become obstructed. But true swabhava is something that will definitely manifest at a given time when obstructions are removed. Then there is no need to tell somebody, now do this or do that. Swabhava, automatically, it is a tremendous force because behind it is the will of the divine. The divine has given that work, and the moment all the obstructions are removed, that swabhava will manifest automatically. That is why Sri Krishna also tells Arjuna that even if you want to run away from the battlefield, you will come back because it is your swabhava. You cannot resist it. You will come back. When all your prakriti, sattva, rajas, tamas will all be quiet and you will really be yourself, automatically you will run into the battlefield and do your work. So, that swabhavajam is automatically sahajam. Sahajam means that which is spontaneous, which is irresistible. Swadharma is somewhat to be distinguished from swabhava. Swabhava is the becoming of your true self. Swadharma is the law of the development of that true nature. There is a movement, it's called bhava. There is dharma, means there is a law of that bhava. A plant is first of all to be put into the soil and then it begins to grow, but it doesn't give flower immediately the very next day. There is a law of its development. So there is a bhava, swabhava, there is a law of, there is a kind of a movement. But that movement has its own law. It moves in a particular rhythm. So when your swabhava begins to develop according to the law of that development, that is called swadharma. You give to a child what you should give to the PhD student is wrong, because even though the child may have that capacity in due course when he becomes and his movement develops, at that given stage, it is not according to Swadharma. That which is Swadharma for the child is what is appropriate to the child at that time. Therefore, you have to find out for each one what is his Swabhava and what is his Swadharma. Everybody does not move at the same rhythm. That also is an important point. Different children have different rhythms with regard to different activities.
Is Swabhava governed by the stars of a person?
Swabhava is governed basically by what is put into you by the divine will. That's the basic answer. Now, when you bring in the concept of a star, we are bringing a situation of the intermingling of Swabhava with Rajas, Sattvas and Tamas. This intermingling happens at a given time. That time is what is called Muhurta in astrology. At that time, whatever stars are to be seen, they become a kind of a indicative graph as to when these two things are mingled at a given point. Therefore, if you see the stars' movements and you see the intermingling of these two, how they act and react, there is a correspondence. But even if you do not see the stars, and if you are a good psychologist, and if you see how the two things are mingled together, and if you know what is Swadharma of that intermingling, then you can predict as to how it will move forward.
Remember, when where does yoga come into it?
The yoga is the conscious understanding and the effort to bring Swabhava into operation as quickly as possible. There is a normal movement of mingling of Swabhava with Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. And there is so much of ignorance, there is so much of confusion, and this intermingling is a very difficult and very painful process. The yoga comes in to tell you that there is an intermingling, first of all. Most of our people don't even know there is an intermingling. We human beings normally don't know there are two elements in us. The element of real Swabhava and the element of Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, which is not your Swabhava. We don't even know that the two things have been mingled up. A yogi comes to know that there is a mingling, then watches and finds out what belongs to Prakriti and what belongs to Swabhava. And then guides the individual on the basis of Swabhava. And therefore it follows that sometimes something may be more natural to you, you may be able to do more quickly according to Prakriti. But Swabhava, it may not be appropriate to your Swabhava. You may not be able to do things better. And yet Sri Krishna says, you go to Swabhava, even if you are not able to do your things so well. Which ordinarily you will say, why did he do it? This child is able to do this very well in this. And you tell him, don't do it, and ask him to do something in which he is not so proficient to do. Why do you do that? Yogi's answer is that this mingling in him at present is not appropriate. He is not fitting with each other. Therefore, in order to make the individual grow on his right lines, ultimately, you sacrifice even now his proficiency in this, allow him to grow into this, so that gradually that which is irresistible will come out. It will become sahajam.
So the yoga accelerates this one.
That's right, exactly. In fact, Vivekananda, when he was asked, what is yoga? He said, yoga is a process of acceleration. These very words he used. Yoga is the process of acceleration. That which normally takes a long time because of ignorance, because of our unintelligence, because of our adoption of mechanical means, we are not able to move fast. If you know things properly, then you accelerate the whole process. What is normally done in 10 years, you can do in 6 months. So now come back again to this question of offering of action. Although it is true that you have to offer all actions, as you move forward, you do make a distinction between discovering your true action and doing action according to what is being done automatically, mechanically by you. The more you offer your true action, your svabhavajam, the greater will be the speed of your movement. Your sacrifice will be much greater and you will enter into a greater relationship with the Supreme Lord, and siddhi, the highest achievement, will be quicker. But when you reach the highest, then again you find that you do not become restricted. Restriction is a law of your development during the process of development. This is my work, this is his work, that is his work. This is my nature, that is his nature. This is true only as long as we are moving from lower levels to the higher levels. But once you reach the higher levels, then these divisions become thinner and thinner. Then it is possible for you to do any work. You will become fourfold. You will become Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra at once, all the four. Therefore, your svabhava will be multiple, ananta guna. Therefore, this law is only a law of development, but it does not bind you. Therefore, sarvadharman parityajya. This law is a law of development. At a certain stage of your achievement, you give up all the bondages, all the restrictions. You throw yourself wholly to the divine, and divine is ananta guna, therefore he can pour into you any kind of karma. You become instrument of his. Like Shri Krishna, once I had said, Shri Krishna in his svabhava, he was a Brahmin because he was a great teacher. Bhagavad Gita itself is an example of what a great teacher he was. He was a Kshatriya because he was a great warrior. He had fought so many battles in his life. He was Vaishya because he was the greatest lover, because Vaishya's basic work is exchange. And the most important movement of exchange is love. Therefore, Vaishya is basically a lover. And he was a supreme lover. And he was Shudra, that is to say, he could do any kind of work, even menial work. He became the charioteer in the battlefield, looking after the horses, how to give them rest, how to make the water to be given to them, and how to obey Arjuna's orders. If Arjuna said, take me here, he would take him there. If he says, take me there, he would take him there. That requires a tremendous capacity of obedience. He was a great Shudra. So, you arrive at a point where you can't even describe saying he is Brahmin or Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. He is all. All distinctions disappear. Whatever divine wills of him, that he is able to do. And that is the highest level of Karma Yoga. When you reach the acme of Karma Yoga, whatever is willed of the divine, by the divine in you, you find necessary capacity to do it. Sri Aurobindo says his own example. When somebody wrote a letter to Sri Aurobindo about philosophy, and Sri Aurobindo said, I am not a philosopher, not a philosopher, not a philosopher. I am a poet. That was his real, you might say, svabhava. Then he explains how he became a philosopher. He said, at a given time, it was necessary to manifest the knowledge that was accumulated by him as a result of the prayer of the mother. The mother prayed to Sri Aurobindo, all the knowledge that you have, give it to the mankind. So Sri Aurobindo agreed. Now, how to manifest that knowledge in the best possible manner for this world? This world understands that knowledge only in philosophical terms. So Sri Aurobindo said that that was demanded of me to be a philosopher. So I became a philosopher. And he became the greatest philosopher. And it was so simple as this. It was will of the divine that he should write philosophically. Although he had no swabhava of it, it manifested as a philosopher. And the Life Divine that he wrote is the greatest philosophical work in the world today. Such is the possibility when you reach the highest height of Karma Yoga. Then you become the instrument of God, and God cleans everything, all kinds of restrictions of Svabhava, Swadharma, all is removed. That is the real meaning of Sarvadharman Parityajya. All dharmas are surrendered. So there is no obstruction at all of any kind. A perfect instrument which is readily available to the divine, and whatever divine wills, the instrument is able to do it. This also answers the question whether one should do good action or bad action. Now, this is a third theory now. The third theory is, according to this theory, Karma Yoga consists of doing good actions. It is similar to Dharma and Adharma, but there is a slight difference. Svabhava, Swadharma is a much more detailed analysis. But this idea of good or bad is much simpler. According to this theory, you should do the good actions and avoid bad actions. You should do the right action and avoid the wrong action. As a result, there is a theory that Karma Yoga consists of doing your own duty. Duty for duty's sake is another theory of Karma Yoga. What am I to do in life? What is my duty? What is not my duty is not my work. If I am a teacher and not a principal of the school, then I would say my work is to teach in the class. It is not my business to admit children, to see what is happening in the whole school. It's not my duty. If I do my duty, I am doing Karma Yoga. I am not supposed to do anything else. This is a third theory. And very often it is said that Bhagavad Gita actually gives you this doctrine of duty for duty's sake. It's also argued by many people that Bhagavad Gita is nothing but a Karma Yoga which prescribes to you that you should do your duty. Is it really so? Does the Karma Yoga of the Bhagavad Gita boil down to the doctrine of duty for duty's sake? And very often answer is yes, because Arjuna, when he came to the battlefields, he came because it was his duty to fight. And therefore he had come to the battlefields. Seeing his grandfather and his teacher and many other friends and brothers standing against him, he was bewildered. He became weak and feeble and said, how can I fight with them? And therefore he said, I will not fight. And then Arjuna was rebuked by Sri Krishna and said, you have forgotten your duty. Your duty is to fight. And that was the answer. And then Arjuna began to fight. That is all the Bhagavad Gita is nothing but this. He has come as a result of his sense of duty. He forgot his duty and Sri Krishna reminded him and said, your duty is to fight. And he began to fight. That is the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. But this is a very superficial reading of the Bhagavad Gita. Not that the idea of beauty is not there at all. The idea of beauty is present. But the center of the whole argument of Bhagavad Gita is not beauty for beauty's sake. If you analyze the argument of Arjuna, when he says, I will not fight, do you find that in that argument, he was not aware of his duty? You can say that he forgot his duty, only if in his argument there is no mention of his duty. But that is not so. He knows very well. He clearly states that for the sake of my duty, I should really fight and kill these people. But he says, I will not do it. It's not as if he has forgotten it. Why? Because he finds that if I kill, there will be a great adharma. Fighting is my dharma, but performing my dharma, another big adharma will be produced. Why? Because large number of people will be massacred, will be slaughtered, will be killed. Therefore, there will be dharmakshaya, kuladharmakshaya. The women will give up their dharma. And ultimately, varnasankara jayate, the whole clan will be scattered and there will be so much of mixture of blood and the whole idea of dharma will be destroyed. So he says, dharma produces adharma. If duty produces adharma, is duty to be performed? That is his question. And Sri Krishna's answer is not merely this, that look, your duty is to fight, therefore you fight. No. He says, your svabhava, there is a difference between that which is an action as a duty, and an action that proceeds from your svabhava. Your duty may be according to anything that is given in your society. It may not be according to your svabhava. So Sri Krishna's answer is that you, because of your svabhava, seeing your swadharma, seeing your swadharma you should fight. He doesn't say seeing your duty you must fight. That is one answer. Even that Arjuna does not accept. Arjuna's argument is that when dharma, even swadharma is going to produce this adharma, the whole kuladharma will be destroyed. Therefore, he says that renunciation is better. Therefore, he brings another idea. That when dharma and adharma are in the question, then you should renounce all the action. Neither do this nor do that. You just renounce. Therefore, the whole Bhagavad Gita arises out of this. Is renunciation the right thing to do? And Sri Krishna's answer ultimately is, neither that you should do renunciation, nor should you do your duty, but you should do divyam karma. You should do the divine's work. The answer of Sri Krishna is that there is something else. If you do the divine's work according to the whole karma yoga, in which you transcend the idea of duty, you transcend even the idea of swadharma. The whole consideration is, what is the divine's will? If the divine himself, through you, is shooting arrows, then that is the right thing to do. You don't consider that is right or wrong. You now transcend that whole idea of right, wrong, good, bad. You see the Supreme. What is Supreme doing in you? You are only a flute. Let the flute player play your flute that you are. And if you, as Sri Krishna says, now I show you what the Supreme is doing. And therefore, in the 11th chapter, Sri Krishna shows the whole Visharup Darshan and says, here you see what the Supreme is doing. And Arjuna cries out and says, I am seeing all the Kauravas being killed. Supreme himself was killing. Arjuna's ideas and Arjuna's fears and his ideas of confusions of dharma, adharma, everything was blocking the way of the divine's action. So his answer is, you see what is divine's will and you become his instrument. That is the answer of Sri Krishna. But in the process, there is a place for duty, there is a place for Swadharma, there is a gradation even of Swadharma. There is a place for the movement of Prakriti. There is a place for intermingling, rising from one guna to the other. All this is the process rightly to be done. But ultimately, all that has to be transcended so that there remains only one thing, the Divine's will, your purity of instrumentality, complete surrender to that will of the Divine, and allowing that will to pass through you without obstruction. This is the answer of Sri Krishna. And that is why this teaching is not an ethics. In ethical book, you are told what are duties. And if you forget duties, you are reminded here is a duty. Such is not the answer of Sri Krishna. He gives a completely different dimension. That if you really want to know what you have to do, don't consider dharma or dharma. I take you to another perception altogether. There is something like action which proceeds from the divine. Therefore, go back to the origin. And karma yoga consists in knowing the origin of things and offering yourself to that origin and receive whatever comes from there. So these are the three steps of karma yoga, and these are the complexities of the karma yoga.